Eric, stop talking.
Okay.
I have not recorded this episode.
What?
No!
Are you serious?
Oh, no, wait! Chill out. I think I have a recording.
You do?
No, we got it. I think I got everything completely. Sci-fi party line.
Of the Sci-Fi Party Line podcast. This is your hostess, Kat, and today I have with me Carl.
What's happening, Kat?
Hey. And Eric returns.
Okay. All right.
He sounds so happy and peppy. And I have with us Daryl.
Hey, I'm just on vacation. I just wanted to stop by and say hi.
And next on The Quiet Storm,
we're going to slow this down for Kat. This goes out to you.
Thank you so much. Tonight, we're going to talk about The Dark Knight Rises, the new Batman film. First, I must say that, you know, I am deeply saddened about what happened in Colorado, Aurora, Colorado, with the sci-fi fans who, you know, went out of their way to go to a midnight showing to see this movie, see this film, and got abused for their efforts. And some people lost their lives. A lot of people are hurt. And I have to say that with all the violence that goes on in the world, you kind of have to brush some of that off, but it builds up. And there's just always this one incident that you have to say, you know, damn it, what the hell is going on? Why would you do something like this? So I'm pretty upset about it. I think the guy, he has no explanation for it. And I don't think any explanation would do, because 12 people are gone. And, you know, people just wanted to watch a film. People wanted to escape. And they got hurt for their effort. So I don't know if any of you guys have spoken about this. Anybody want to have anything to say?
Well, I just want to say my heart goes out to the people that, especially to the people that lost somebody at the, you know, at the attack, and for the people that got hurt. And I just wish that, I hope that people will not make him a celebrity, which is probably why he did it, because that's what usually these kind of guys, these kind of people that don't have a life, they don't feel important. They want to be important. And it doesn't matter if they take people's lives to do it. So I just hope that, you know, you remember the people that are the victims, and they don't make somebody important that's not really important, other than to make him suffer or to just kill him.
Wow. Eric, Carl?
You got it, Eric.
I don't know. I haven't said anything. I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah, sometimes that's the best, if you don't know.
I think we also have to be real careful about our reaction to this, because as long, you know, we've been going to movies for years, all our lives, and there has never been really an incident like this. Mm-mm. And, you know, as crazy as we are as fans, and as passionate as we are about the films and all of that, I think it's also important that we don't overreact to this one incident out of all of the theaters, out of all of the years. I mean, already we're talking about metal detectors, mm-hmm. at the movie theaters. And you know, my personal favorite, I've been going to AMC theaters forever. And, you know, you guys have even shared some of my special moments at AMC with you guys. And now, guess what? No costumes at AMC. As a result of this, you can't wear costumes anymore. Now, I mean, Harry Potter, Tron. I mean, think about all of the stuff
Star
that we've
Trek,
been through.
Yeah.
Star Trek. And especially that fan base that comes in at midnight for that kind of showing. And now you're telling them, because of this incident, which, if you review the details of it, was totally independent of costumes. He came in, walked through, you know, what they needed to do, secure the darn back door. You know, put an alarm on that. Don't try to, you know, inflict all that craziness and draconian measures on everybody else. Mm-hmm. So from a spirit standpoint, you know, everything about Batman is about uprising and, and being bigger than what it is that you know, any atrocities that you encounter, that's definitely part of the mission and what we got to remember. But at the same time, you know, this we need a balanced reaction to what actually happened here, and I hope we can go on and continue to enjoy movies the way we always have.
Yeah, because people don't want to hear it, but you can't prevent something like this. It could be this. It could have been the mall, you know, in daytime. Yeah. It could have been anywhere. This guy wanted attention. It wasn't that he didn't pick it because it was Batman. He didn't pick it for any other reason than it was a lot of people in one place. And you just can't prevent it. You just have to live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The metal detectors, like, think how miserable it is to fly on an airplane today, right? I don't want that going in to see the latest Star Trek movie. Like, last night I went to see Star Trek Next Generation Anniversary Special. There were two guys in costume and in the theater. No, I mean, there was no security or anything like that. Everybody was well behaved, but I was really happy to see two guys in costume. I wore just a t-shirt, and a lot of people just wore t-shirts. But I don't want somebody to not be able to wear, you know, something as Spartan as a Star Trek costume to a theater because some guy in red freaking hair decided to kill everybody or kill a whole bunch of people. Like, he even got the Joker wrong. Didn't Joker have green hair? Didn't he have green hair?
Yeah, it wasn't so Joker.
What was he trying to do? Like, he claimed himself the Joker, and now he's... You're like Ronald McDonald or some weird clown or something. You're not the Joker. His hair is green. Get it right if you're gonna freaking... But I was happy that Christopher Nolan made a statement. Christian Bale actually visited some of the folks, which I thought was very touching. And I have a lot of respect for him for doing that because he didn't have to. He could have been a diva and not did that. But I'm so happy he did that. So, Eric, seriously, nothing to say.
Okay. My hands are that.
Okay, that's fine. Well, you know, not to downplay what happened there, but I do want to talk about the movie a bit more, and I guess if there are any updates, we might discuss it on Sci-Fi Party Line, but for now, you know, rest in peace to the people who lost their lives doing what they wanted to do to have fun and watch a good Batman film, and the people who got hurt. You know, hopefully they'll make it through.
Yeah. All right then.
Yeah. So The Dark Knight Rises, let's start off with a little bit of numbers from Box Office Mojo. It made $180 million domestic as of 7/23, which was Monday. I hear you eating, Carl. You're not being slick.
I didn't hear a thing.
By the way, the whole Box Office Mojo thing was weird because over the last few years, I've become like a religious watcher of them whenever like big movies come out. And usually they report like Thursday through Monday, you know, with updates. And because of the Colorado thing, there was like a complete moratorium. Hollywood decided not to release any stats all through the weekend.
Yes.
So there were no numbers until early this morning, actually. And so I just thought it was weird because it was just nothing. All the different websites... their most recent update was Thursday, right before the midnight showing, and then there's just nothing at all.
So did they not count those people, Eric, or did they...
No, they counted them, but first it started with Warner Brothers saying, we're not going to release our numbers.
Which I respected. Now.
And then other movies, like Ice Age, another one said, oh, you know what, we're not going to do it either. So no one released any numbers until, like, early this morning, all through the weekend.
I think it was kind of classy of them to do that. I mean, you know, as far as movie execs go, it's kind of classy. And speaking of Warner Brothers, Eric, they are in the process of donating money to some of those victims in Colorado. So I think that's pretty awesome of them as well. So
Yeah.
So Eric, do you think that number 180 million is wrong?
No. I think it's right. Well, most people look at the number that's through Sunday. The 3 days, which includes the midnight showings, and it was like around 160 for the 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing is that was a bit lower than expected. People were thinking the 168 to 200 range for the opening weekend. Some people thought it might even top Avengers, which holds the record right now, like at 207. But it obviously just came in at 160. But it came in a sliver above the Dark Knight's 3-day weekend opening. Yeah. But
by like two something.
Yeah, but of course inflation probably gave it that extra boost.
Oh yeah, I didn't think
about it. But still, but it wasn't
3D.
It did well. No, it wasn't 3D. But of course, Dark Knight wasn't 3D either. But of course, Avengers was. That had that advantage.
Right.
So that was domestic. It made a lot less foreign, unless we don't have all those numbers, which was only 80 million. A trend I've been seeing since we've been doing Sci-Fi Party Line this past year is that the foreign numbers have always been a little higher.
Yeah, but also this year, at least two movies, Prometheus, Spider-Man. Spider-Man, I think Avengers and Prometheus started a week earlier at most places around the world.
You are correct. Thank you.
In the United States. Yes, and I don't know how much it's The Dark Knight. I'm not sure how much it is open worldwide yet.
WB, Warner Brothers doesn't release their movies till, because I have friends who are in Mexico and, you know, out of the country. They do foreign later. Sometimes they don't get, like, Green Lantern, they didn't open up in Puerto Rico until the week after it released here.
Well, you know, might have benefited.
No, well, yeah.
But also, usually these types of movies, these ones that are back.
Warner Brothers hold back.
Usually movies that are like superhero movies are less grounded in the United States than the movies that are just like, I don't know, contemporary dramas or rom-coms. Usually these movies play a lot better worldwide, and
yeah.
I'm sure it'll have pretty good numbers. And it's always when they have like iconic type characters like Superman, Batman, etc. Those things usually play pretty well worldwide.
Mm-hmm. Even Cap, which they were worried about.
The production budget was rumored to be $250 million. So it hasn't quite made its money back, but I have no doubt that it will.
No, it will, yeah.
Yeah.
And then some.
Yep.
So, okay, enough of that crap. Let's talk about the movie. Actually, I want to go with an opinion, not mine, first. And I want to go with Daryl, mainly because Daryl is a... Is Batman your thing in reading comics? Comic books?
Yeah, he's one of my favorites. I've started reading, when I started reading, period, I started reading Batman in comics. So
how are these movies, the Christian Bale movies, are they true to the comic book or anything?
That's it. With nerddom, it's an argument between fractions of people who say it's not Batman because, you know, things like Batman would never quit being Batman, things like silly, you know, stuff like that. And then I hold to it that the heart of it is Batman. I mean, Bruce Wayne's whole thing was he wanted to not just avenge his parents, but he always wanted to protect Gotham. I think Nolan captured that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they changed the origin a little bit. They changed how he went about it. But to me, I think they captured everything that he needed to do. Alfred, you know, the way that they love each other is, you know, father and son and friends. And, you know, like Commissioner Gordon, how they have that partnership, you know, and that camaraderie that they have. He captured that. I mean, so the important stuff is there.
So what's not there? I hear a butt coming on.
No, but.
Oh, it's no but. But
you're going to get, I mean, if you look at, you know, with other people who are really, really heavily into comics, especially into the Batman characters, there are complaints about Batman and how he, you know, him quitting, the way that Bane is portrayed.
How is Bane different from what's in the comic books?
Well, in the comic, Bane had nothing to do really with the Ra's al Ghul angle. He was just the son of a drug lord who was arrested. His mother was arrested when he was in the womb, and then he was born in prison. And he learned, the prisoners educated him. Like, Batman got trained by different people all over the world in different skills. He learned all his skills from different criminals in the prison. And to the point where when he became an adult, he took over the prison and then he got out. And then he wanted to test himself against the one place he felt was matched to where he was from. And that was Gotham because of how bad it was. So that was the little differences that they did.
Did it hurt your enjoyment of it at all?
No, because Bane was kind of, with the Venom serum, he would use this Venom serum that would give him enhanced strength. It was kind of like the Super Soldier serum, but you had to constantly pump it into your system to get the strength. So that, when you're a kid reading it, it was fun to see that and see him beat up Batman. When you're an adult watching a movie, you and it's in Batman and Robin, it looks kind of silly when it's shown, you know, live action. So I preferred them to leave that part out, which they did, and I think it works a little bit better. You get the best part of Bane being that he's smart. He's just as smart as Bruce Wayne. He's just as cunning as Bruce Wayne. But the only thing is, he's a criminal. He thinks like a criminal. So, you know, you have all of those skills, but he's evil. They got that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. So what were some of your favorite parts of the movie itself, aside from the comic books?
I think one of my favorite parts about it was the conversation Alfred had with Bruce.
Oh, yeah.
And he was getting ready to put on the cowl again after all those years, when he was trying to drill it into his head that I wanted you to have a life and you're not doing it. You know, and how disappointed he was about it. Like, I love that part. Of course, I love the beatdown with Bane, because the way that he broke him down.
Oh, yeah.
And it got in his head mentally. I loved how they did that and captured that. The Selina Kyle stuff I loved. They pretty much got back the Catwoman a lot, pretty much like the book.
Interesting. Awesome.
Yeah. Well, they got away from it. But when she was originally, when they showed her in year one, that wasn't when she was originally shown, but when they did year one, which kind of updated the characters, the Bat characters by Frank Miller, she was actually like a madam for prostitutes, and she defended prostitutes, and like that was what she did. They kind of allude to, you could say that she might have had those ties to the streets when she was growing up, because she was, you know, she grew up on the streets. She was homeless and she had to do what she had to do to survive. So they kind of allude that there were things that she did that she was not proud of in the movie, but they kind of get away from that now, you know, as it went on. They kind of got away from that prostitution angle because it's not too kid friendly.
Yeah, I imagine not.
Yeah, but I think it fit. She was, you know, she's smart. She's rebellious. You know, she's sexy. She's a strong fighter. But she's always attracted Batman. He's always seen that kindred spirit in her. You know, they captured that from the books too. And she's not really a bad guy, but, you know, she just has her own ways of doing stuff. So that was all captured in this movie to me.
Awesome. So, Eric.
So me, yeah, just real quick, I think, yeah, all the geeks need to chill out, because on inconsistencies and things of that nature, I'm not that familiar with the lore of Batman in the pages of the comics, but just with anything, whether it's Spider-Man or this or Star Trek, everyone needs to chill out, and especially with the comic characters, because, man, if anybody ever read a large amount of comics of any title, there's inconsistencies all over the place. They constantly reinvent the world. You mentioned year one, and in year one rewrote a lot of things that came before it, but for the betterment of the series. And so then I don't understand why. I always wonder, is it the true geeks, or is it like the part-time geeks who are the ones you get so upset? Because you should know this, you know, you should know this. And even if they don't reinvent, they always do things like Earth 2 or, what do you call it? What Ifs and Ultimate Universe. This stuff happens all the time, and they can coexist. They don't have to be canon. I don't get it. It doesn't really make any sense to me to get so crazy about inconsistencies to the source material. It doesn't make any sense at all. But that being said, I didn't expect this movie to, at this point in the summer, turn out to be perhaps the movie that I think is the best so far this year in
2012. What? What? You said that about Avengers or something.
No, no. Avengers was probably the one that was holding that mantle for now, but I mean, when Avengers came out, there was nothing before it. I mean, nothing that, you know, nothing to seriously challenge it.
Battleship?
Yeah. All right. You know, I was just looking at that movie, by the way, on Box Office Mojo. That movie cost like 200 mil, and it's like domestic at 60 right now.
But, whoa.
But I know, 200? Like, that seems like a, you know, pretty price for that movie that doesn't seem to, yeah. But anyway, no, but Dark Knight, I wasn't, I mean, because obviously I really, really liked Avengers and still do, and Spider-Man was a good thing. And well, you know, maybe part of the reason why is because I never liked The Dark Knight as much as everyone else. I always liked it. I think it's great. But people went crazy for The Dark Knight when it came out. Almost across the board. Everyone was like, oh, greatest superhero movie ever. I never felt that way.
Either.
I always thought it was just pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty damn good. And so, with Dark Knight Rises, I didn't even know if it would top The Dark Knight for me. But in reality, it really did. Which again, goes against, I think, the mainstream, because it seems to be the mainstream, while they kind of like Rises, the popular notion is it's no Dark Knight, though. You know, there's a lack of Ledger and blah, da, 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 da. And this one's overly complex and whatever. But no, for me, this one's a lot better overall. And so that's part of the reason why. It just really surprised me all the way through. I don't know at what point in the movie where I thought, all right, this is really gelling. But it gelled. It really gelled. And it, yeah, it's probably, I think, for me, the greatest achievement of the summer movies this year so far. And I don't think it's going to be topped.
That's some at least during the summer. Talk.
I can't help it. No, I love Avengers. And Avengers is great, and it's fun, and it's like the best donut you ever had. And it just goes down so easy. But Dark Knight, it tickles different parts of the brain. And it's not just that, it's not just the story, but it's the craftsmanship and everything that goes into it. You see everybody doing their job, whether it's director of photography or the costumers or the set designers. Like, everyone's firing on all cylinders on this movie, and I can't really fault it in too many ways.
Carl?
Thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a beautiful film. It was interesting. It was a lot was going on, and I mean, it was a lot better than I thought it was going to be.
Amen.
Yeah, I mean, I had heard some bad news, and you know, and a lot of times when they you know are tinkering with the film, you know, was not like the original release date. They had tried to get it out, and then said, well, we're gonna work on it a little bit more, and then it came out a little later than I think they originally planned. So that delay had me worried. I was like, oh geez, what are they doing? But overall, I really did like the movie. I was surprised how much I did. Now, I still like Dark Knight more. I'm in that party, and the main reason is because I like you know, I guess a certain intimacy to the villain and the hero. Okay, in Dark Knight. It's not even about the acting here. I'm just talking about the scale of the threat and what was going on. The Dark Knight, it was really, you know, Joker, Batman, you know, maybe Two-Face was around, but, you know, Joker and Batman, face-to-face, psychology of what's going on, and it was them. You know, the city was the context, and they were getting it done there. With Rises, it was so huge. The scale, I mean, the whole city is a prison. Then, you know, you got to take it back to, no, it's not just, you know, Batman's teacher, but it's his teacher's alternate protege and his girlfriend. You know, it's like, what? You know, it's, and then, you know, it's not just that, you know, Batman's fighting against, you know, everybody that he knows and loves. They got all his toys, so all the weapons and gear are now roaming the streets locked down. It was just so big that I think, you know, it's starting to fall into that Transformers area where the scale of what it is that you're doing, you can sometimes lose, you know, the intimacy of the character, intimacy of what was going on that's supposed to be motivating it. It was big. Fist fight, you know, a 4 or 5 block long gun fight / fist fight between the cops and the henchmen. You know, that's big. You know, it's just rolling out in the streets and fighting into the bank. And of course, Bane finds Batman, you know, and they are duking it out in the middle of all of this. You didn't see one dude just pull out a gun and shoot Batman. Nuh-uh, that's Bane's time. You know, so those two, you know, that's how you got to do it. But it was so much stuff going. Oh yes, okay, like can't forget, so you know, Selena Kyle's popping up and she was looking good and everything. But I happened to take a young lady to see the Batman movie, and I was, thank you, yes, I am the Mac. I'm like, baby, you want to go to the theater? Come with me. This is what we're gonna do.
Okay. Daddy gonna take you to the movie.
We're going to do that. But I'm making a point here. I didn't. She's not, you know, she's not like a big sci-fi fan, not a big action, you know, hero kind of fan. So I was real curious to see what she thought of the movie. She loved Catwoman. She was just all about the Catwoman. She couldn't stop talking about the heels. I mean, it was just, I got to get me some heels. Like, okay. So she was really bonding with the Catwoman in a way that, you know, maybe as, you know, as a dude, I just didn't quite see. She really got excited about her as a strong female character in the story, and you know, she did her share of a butt kicking in it. But again, my focus still is on Batman and supposedly Bane as the main villain in the movie, and with the twists and turns, and with the complexity of so much that was going on. And of course, occasionally I had a little trouble hearing Bane. You know, you forget about how important sound and reading lips is when there's a lot of stuff going on. Poor Bane. There were a couple of cases where I was like, man, I have no idea what he just said. I really did.
But then, it was kind of hard.
So on one hand, it was the mask. The other hand, our theater was doing something odd with the stereo too. Even though it was IMAX, the levels were odd.
I got a lot to say about that.
Yeah, it was like all the background was really loud, but the dialogue was cut too quiet in some spots. So that, and the guy with a, you know, paper cup on his mouth, that didn't help at all.
Well, see, I didn't do the IMAX, so I didn't have any issues. Like when he spoke, especially when he had the battle and you heard all the noise when they were underground, I still heard him clearly.
Maybe it was the crazy
IMAX. Give me 20 minutes on this topic real quick. Because first time I saw it was IMAX, and real quick, we talked about this before on the show, about the whole digital IMAX, and I went to the same place where I've been going, and interestingly to me, this was analog, and side note, I'm just wondering if when movies are true IMAX, if they have to be analog for some reason, because it wasn't digital like the last two movies I saw at the same theater at the IMAX. But anyway, that being said, the sound was definitely loud and booming, and I like that boomingness. The bass was obviously off the charts, but I only understood about maybe 85-90% of the dialogue, not just Bane, but everyone, like throughout the whole movie at the IMAX. But I just went with it, you know, all right, I missed some words, no big deal. But then I saw it again at a regular theater, and all of a sudden I understood like 99% of the dialogue, including Bane, and so it filled in all these little blanks for me, seeing it that way. But I would have taken it either way. I mean, with the sound issues aside, yeah. So it, and I've seen other people have those types of comments about wherever they saw it. Oh, another weird thing about Bane that I noticed at either theater, is that I'm thinking this is intentional. Whenever he spoke, he had a weird sound mix, to where he always was front and center. It didn't matter if he was in the back of the room or the front of the room.
I noticed that.
It was always front. And I was joking around earlier, talking to other friends, kind of thinking maybe it was done intentionally for artistic reasons. It was mentioned earlier how it seemed like Bane would get in like people's head, like in Batman's head or whoever. And I kind of thought maybe they did that intentionally just for that. Whenever Bane spoke, it's like he was getting in your head. As an audience member, just like he was getting in the different characters' heads in the movie. That's just my reading into things. but
that's a good save because I'll let it slide at that. But it, yeah, that was like Bane in your face. That was the whole movie. You don't want to know where Batman is. You know, right here. Bane is here. He could be across the room. He could be in a car driving down the street. And strangely, he's still in Dolby for some reason.
Yes. And also, by the way, I saw the prologue of the movie back that came out in November with Mission Impossible 4, which was basically the entire plane scene. And Bane's voice was very, very different in the original mix. It was much more scratchy and altered and going through multiple filters and much less decipherable. So this was a much better improvement. So just thank that.
I didn't realize that it was supposed to be like a ventilator kind of in a way. And I think when he first did the film, I think he was trying to get it so that you heard it like it was going through a ventilator, but then I think he realized when they tested it that nobody could really understand him, because when you're in a ventilator you can't really talk.
So supposedly the original mix, they said it was artistic, that it was intentional that you wouldn't understand everything he said, but yeah, there was just imagine, I don't know, I just imagine someone who, like, you know, people who have those little devices on their voice box when they, you know, when they get their vocal cords cut out. Just imagine, I mean, there could be someone who could exist that you just wouldn't understand everything they said, and you would just kind of go along with it. And
he hit you.
Yeah, yeah, and you kind of don't want to ask Bane to repeat himself, like, more than twice. You just nod your head and just go along with it.
Because, you know, Bane had that, I think he was trying to give off the thing where you never knew what Bane's reaction was going to be. Like, even when he, like, threw, you knew he was going to kill those two guys when they brought Gordon down there. Like, when he said to them, he said, why did you bring him down here? Like, he had the look in his face like, you know I'm going to kill you, but I want you to answer.
Well, I like, because he said, why are you here? And he's like, oh, I brought him because, no, why are you here?
Right.
I love that. And I know a lot of people criticize this movie because they said, you know, you couldn't really get Tom Hardy's performance. Certainly not like the Joker. Oh, I don't know, I did too. But a lot of people, you know, his face was so obscured, yada yada. And I thought, man, I thought, first of all, that argument to me was just like saying, oh, you couldn't get Darth Vader's character across because he's wearing a full mask and can't turn his neck. But no, it's the voice, it's still the mannerisms of the body. And then with Bane, I mean, to me, it really sold it because of the mask, I was constantly focusing on his eyes or his throat to see, is he really saying these words? You know, just kind of paying extra attention. So then, to me, it really pays off when you see him and his tears later in the movie. Because it's almost like when Vader finally gets his mask off in Jedi. It's like, wow, he's really all of a sudden gushing with emotion.
And Obi-Wan was right.
Yeah, and the other thing I liked was that I read some reviewer point out that, like, Bane is like a really, like, great, part of the reason why he was a really great foil for Batman is that when you look at them as Batman or Bane, like, the parts of Bane's face that are obscured are the parts of Batman that that you see. Mm-hmm. The only parts that you see when he's Batman. I saw
perfect sense.
It's cool. It works.
And Bane was so the opposite. Like, I think, I mean, I can't even pick a favorite out of the three because I look at it like it's a whole story. This is just the third part of a whole big story, what they were trying to do with Bruce Wayne. They actually have a guy who was that devoted. Like, that was what he was trying to get. Like Bruce Wayne was like, I want to be in this life. I don't want to be in this life. I kind of want to get out of it. I don't, you know, like, and Alfred was trying to get him to realize, you know, that you have to decide. You got to, you know, pick something and get your life together and just move on. After you've done what you needed to do, you need to move on. And everybody was trying to get him Lucius was trying to get him to do that, because you can't face a character, a villain, who is that devoted. Like, Bane was totally devoted and what he wanted to do. He didn't have any type of doubt.
Let me get heavy for a second.
Uh-oh.
You know, because I was really thinking about this. Okay, so we get the Ra's al Ghul vision, the Liam Neeson cameo, and, you know, Bruce Wayne's first reaction is like, no, you couldn't be here. Like, I saw you die. And Neeson says, well, you know, there's so many different forms of immortality. And, you know, eventually we get the reveal. We understand that it's his daughter who's behind all this. And that's kind of Ra's al Ghul's way to live beyond the grave. And, I'm always thinking about that in other movies, too, because you always think about that when someone has a kid or something. You know, it's like a more human way to at immortality. And I'm like, all right, that's great. But I just thought about that right now listening to you, because you're talking about, you know, how does Batman get away from it all? How does Bruce hang up the cape? And in a way, maybe Ra's al Ghul did pass on his last lesson to Bruce Wayne, because obviously someone else rises at the end of this film. And in a way, that is Batman's immortal legacy, to keep it carrying on beyond Bruce Wayne. And I see that. I mean, because I see a lot of these things. Nolan loves to do this, where he has, like, these themes that run heavily. And I think that was Ra's al Ghul's way, and that was Batman's way, was the way to pass on the mantle. I don't know.
Remember what Dent said. Remember when they had dinner in Dark Knight, and Dent was saying that Batman is here to inspire us. And, you know, there was that soldier that they took arms against the criminals, even though it was illegal to do it. But once they did it, they gave up and they were arrested and killed. You know, like, you become the villain, you know, you're the hero until you become the villain. And he kept saying it like that. That was a little thing Nolan kept putting in there, that, you know, Batman's thing is to be the ideal. You're not, it's not about just you. It's about you providing a legacy that can go on and on and on without you. Because once you die, you can't let that, you know, you can't let the whole thing die with you. And he finally got it.
Yeah. And he, of course, did pass on the gauntlet. Mm-hmm. That was very clear in there between Commissioner Gordon and the new young detective. Even Batman got to pass on a little something. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I dig the artistic symmetry, and it's like Nolan's calling card.
Because in the comics, because the thing about the comics is, because it's a comic, you can have Batman fighting when he's 70 years old.
Yeah,
Batman, you know, that's not a problem, because it's in a comic book. But when you're doing a realistic take, you're not. Your knees get messed up. I'm limping. You limp now. When you get to 40, you walk a little too much.
Unless you're Harrison Ford. And then you just keep on fighting. You just keep fighting. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, he just gets grouchier.
That's right. He doesn't get
old. Just gets more grouchy. But I mean, realistically, you would have to move on. You would break down. You could not possibly do this, you know, over and over and over again. And he did more crime fighting. He took off more criminals off the street, you know, with the actions that he took, than the comic book version of Batman ever did. You know, I know people complain about it, but, you know, he's Batman for years and there's still always crime in Gotham. Like, maybe 1 year, you know, like a whole year, they did that Dent Act. And they took all those criminals off the streets, and unlike Batman, kept them off the streets, because that would be the reoccurring thing. They would get in there, and then they would get out, and then you'd have to fight Joker again, then you'd have to fight Riddler again. Constantly, they would always get out, and that would be the question, like, am I doing more harm than good? Because they seem to always just come back and kill again and again and again. He did something about it, and it lasted. You know, this was the biggest thing he could have done, was get that Dent Act done. And even with the Dent Act being probably repealed, because of what happened in Gotham, he got everybody's attention up. Like, if you fall asleep, if you you get lazy, this is what can happen. You know, we almost lost the entire city.
Yeah.
So it's Nolan, man. He knows how to do it.
And he also used a lot of characters from Inception, or actors from Inception.
I'm telling you. I mean, it was like, I'm getting flashbacks. First of all, how many times we got to see Liam coming back from the dead, all right?
Wait, excuse me. I let out an audible gasp when Liam Neeson came on the screen because I did not know he was in this movie. It was not revealed to me. I didn't look at IMDb.
I teased it when we were doing Spider-Man.
Really?
And at the very end, and I said, oh, and, you know, I'm not going to tell you who's supposedly going to appear in Dark Knight. And I said, I hope I didn't just spoil it for you.
I put it out of my mind. And then I saw him, and I was like, in the quiet theater, and, like, somebody chuckled because it's like, what is her deal?
Do you guys know what Ra's al Ghul's thing is? Like, why he kept saying he doesn't die? Well, besides that.
Oh, he's a Jedi?
Midichlorians,
his
baby.
His career can survive a bad Lucas movie. No, that's not what I'm talking about is Ra's al Ghul in the comics, he had this, there was this Lazarus pit. And basically he could go into the, when he died or when he got too old, he would go into the Lazarus pit and it would revitalize him.
Yeah.
He's been alive for years, and he always wanted to have somebody take over as him, you know, take over his organization, and he wanted Bruce Wayne to do it. So that's his thing. Like, they took it out of the movie. It was in the book. They kind of alluded to in the book that Bruce Wayne, when he was investigating Dent and trying to look at stuff about Ra's, that they were, stuff about him being old, like he would, you know, references to history of mm-hmm. him being always being alive, but they kind of took that out and they left that out of it. But that was the big thing that he kept saying, like, even when you think I'm dead, my organization lives on. So that's what was so different about this guy.
Jedi.
Yeah, I guess
Obi-Wan. You're my only hope. Well, Liam Neeson, I didn't expect. So, you know, instantly this movie got really excited to me and became one of my favorites of the year because of that. I know it's crazy, but whatever. Mm-hmm. I kind of fell in love with Bruce Wayne a little bit because before I wasn't feeling him. I didn't really get him. I wasn't connecting with him at all. And he was just some guy running around doing stuff. But this one, this particular film, I don't know what it was or what it was exactly, but I know he seemed softer. It seems he seemed approachable and more human than he ever has before. And I really enjoyed that. Maybe Catwoman had a hand in that. Maybe she did. Maybe she didn't. I'm not really sure. But I just really appreciated him.
He was broken.
I don't like broken men. That's not, you know, what I'm trying to say here. I'm just, I don't know, I guess.
Well, he was definitely much more vulnerable in this one. Mm-hmm. And also, like, he was super overconfident earlier in the prior two. But then in the second, of course, for much of the movie, he was obsessed with, like, Rachel. And then mm-hmm. he always having the models on his arm and all that crazy stuff. But so it's definitely the much more mellow Bruce.
Maybe.
You know, don't put your hopes on me, like your hopes for redemption or having a life. It was like he used Rachel as the, you know, I can always have a life as long as she's out there. I can be Batman and do all the stuff I need to do, but I always have her. So when I want to give this up, I can give it up. And he had to realize that's not your lifeline. And he lost it. So and I like how in this movie, because they knew it was going to, because Nolan was going to have it be such a big, you know, big in scope, you know, with all of Gotham, it was a while before he became Batman. I mean, they really got into, you really got to see Bruce Wayne first in this and where his head was at before he really got into.
Maybe that's what I like then.
Yeah, and I like that too. But I know a lot of other people out there are like, they don't really see full Batman until like an hour in the movie.
That exactly, Eric?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. I just condense like my whole timeline on Twitter.
A grunt. But yeah, I don't know. So I really connect to him, and I thought it was just, I don't know. I really like that. Catwoman, I was extremely concerned about her.
Yeah. Because of Batman Returns or what?
And Anne Hathaway, I just was just super concerned about her. I didn't really know if she could pull it off. However, what she did in this movie is something I really appreciated. She did like an Audrey Hepburn, Jackie O type of Catwoman, who was kind of classy looking, but still had her, you know, issues and her story. But she just was kind of classy, and I would have never guessed the madam thing. But I'm glad they left that out, because it kind of would have taken away from the character, in my opinion. But I just liked her style. Look at
this scene. Think about that scene where her friend is with that guy that she robbed. Mm-hmm. Remember?
I think they hit it pretty well.
Like, what did that mean? I mean, I just thought...
That was... she bringing these guys up there to take their wallets and stuff, I mean, it could be perceived as...
Yeah, I think it's a metaphor. I mean, they make it seem like they're a little gang of thieves, but I think it's just a metaphor that they're a gang of taking something else from men.
Just the chicks.
Right.
Yeah. But,
for prostitutes, they were really raggedy looking. So,
well, no, I'm not saying they were literally. It wasn't. They weren't overtly prostitutes, but it was just almost like it was a metaphor. I mean, you could read into it if you wanted to, or you could just pretend like that's not an element.
Read the books. If you read the books, you would be like, I see. You know, he did a little thing to it. But if you're not, there's more people that don't read comics at all that would never even think about it. So he's like, that's fine. You don't have to worry about it. The point is, she had her little group that she took care of. You could tell that she really did like to take care of people, because she grew up on the streets.
Is that like the one chick, and she needed like to go to the hair salon, so I don't understand how she's taking care of her. But
it was their place, but
I think maybe that was a little poorly done, but it wasn't, now that you explain it, but in the movie it was just fine, because it was kind of some gloss over, and I knew they were like hanging out, doing stuff, you know, robbing guys or whatever. And it did have the edges of she could be a madam, or just right on the edge of it, but you kind of don't acknowledge it.
And another thing about Anne Hathaway's performance, because obviously I didn't know what to expect either going into this. And the first time she has dialogue, and when Bruce finds her in his little room, in his strange man cave, and she has that whole demure attitude and all that whole innocent thing. And at first I thought, all right, this is cool. I'll go along with this Catwoman. I thought maybe it's like Batman Returns, when Michelle Pfeiffer was this like weak, woman. And like, that's kind of how she was too, when she was like sure boss, when she gave like the hors d'oeuvre to the congressman. I thought, okay, fine, this is going to be her arc. And then like 20 seconds later, she's like, oops. And I'm like, okay, I'll go this route.
I agree with you, Eric. I was just, whatever. Okay. Let's see where this goes.
Exactly. I was just like, okay. Let's keep going.
Yeah. Love how she was in the limo with some sort of politician.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought
the senator.
And he thought, you know, the whole world was going to open up for him. And he got robbed. So that was super hilarious.
He fell in love.
or put a warrant out or something.
Yeah, but he was missing for days.
Yeah, well, whatever. It's a, you know, good romp. He'll laugh about it.
All part of her plan.
Yeah.
So,
Marion, is it Cotillard? How do you? Yeah.
Cotard? Or, it's French.
Yeah, Mal from Inception. So as soon as I realized, because I didn't realize it was her at first, but as soon as I did, I knew she was going to be a bad guy, because...
See, I didn't get that.
Oh, I recognized her instantly, but no, I didn't think she was going to be a bad guy.
I didn't look up any info on this movie, so I didn't know that she was playing... Because I think they made them on IMDb. They made a mistake and put up that she was Talia, and then they took it down and used the other name.
Miranda.
But if I had saw that, I would have known she was going to be the bad guy, but I'm glad that I didn't...
No, I just know that. Because if for some reason, as soon as I recognized her, I was like, oh my God, so it's something she did. I'm not sure what it was, but I was like, oh my gosh, she's going to go crazy and she's going to be the bad guy. I just don't know how she's going to do it. And then so her character was kind of ruined for me because, I don't know, Nolan is kind of typecasting her right now. Well, it's just two movies.
Well, no, I mean, he got me. He totally got me. And I recognized him right away as Mal, but I really did not see it coming. Now, the second time I saw it, all the signposts were there. But the first time,
I thought she was a goner. I thought he was going to lose her all. I thought he was going to lose another woman all over again.
I did too.
Yeah, and I thought, actually, I felt that same thing, but I thought, well, that's kind of weak. Like, really, he's going to lose But see, that's what Nolan does. He sets me up like that. Like, oh, he's going to do that again. But then, I don't know why he dupes me every time.
I think at the point y'all felt that he was going to lose her is probably the point where I felt like she was going to be a bad guy. So, I mean, I guess just the wrong thing, something she did or something. I'm not really sure what it was, but I wasn't surprised when she
was too perfect. And I should have realized that with Nolan, she was too much of the perfect woman for Bruce. She also had that upbringing of thinking, you know, the helping people. She was psychologically made herself be the person that Bruce would actually be attracted to.
Maybe I felt some of that or something, whatever, but I saw her coming a mile away. So as far as Bane, so my costume professor really kind of dug into my ass this semester because I wanted to draw a character in a play and have him have a rebreather on his face, but because it was a sci-fi character, and my whole point was that he wasn't going to have the thing on his face the whole play, just from the beginning, just, you know, walk in, he has a rebreather, he looks cool, and I'm a happy person. But she's like, no, then you have to draw something different, blah blah blah. And I was like, I'm not drawing anything different, blah blah blah. And so whatever, but her point was that when somebody has something on their face, you can't really connect to them. It alienates you, and you're not going to be able to hear them, and it's just going to create problems, and people are going to kind of divorce from the character. I felt that with Bane. When Eric said that his voice was front and center, yeah, he kind of had like the voice of God because it was like separated on a separate track from everyone else. And
yeah.
I thought it was weird, and I just wasn't feeling it. And also, it wasn't until I started Googling that I found out that that was actually Tom Hardy. I thought that was just him voicing.
I thought it was some big Hawaiian guy, and Tom Hardy was like.
You need to see Warrior, and you need to see Bruno on Netflix.
Well, I found out because I saw pictures from those, and I was like, that's actually, because last time I've seen him was Inception. He was like a scrawny, wiry bastard.
Think about him on Nemesis playing the
Shinzon.
Yeah. Which is on right now.
Yeah, yes, he was. He was like a welterweight.
Right. Yeah, I thought Shinzon was kind of thin and wiry too, but
he was. He was a little whiny little.
Yeah, now I'm looking at him right now.
But of course, he's a bald, you know, again, a bald character. But I just never thought that Tom Hardy would get that big, so I didn't think it was him. So that took that away from me as well, and then I thought it was like, oh, this is like a modern Darth Vader. Why are you not responding to him? I guess I must read lips more than I feel. Like Carl said, I must read lips more when I'm listening to someone speak, because I just could not understand him for most of the time. So, I mean, we knew he was a bad guy, but I wanted to hear him speak, but just hearing him just kind of like whispering under his breath or speaking into like a cup, like Carl said, or whoever said it. I didn't connect with him, and I didn't feel the threat like I felt with the Joker. I didn't get what his whole deal was. And there was I think maybe Carl or one of you guys said that the intimacy with the villain hero, that wasn't there because they didn't really get to interact on
Other than the beatdown,
mm-hmm. It's just not really a lot of talking, because I thought at some point, you know, when Batman was kicking his ass, you know, mopping him with the floor, that the thing was going to come off. And I would have really enjoyed that, because I would have been really shocked to see, oh my God, that is Tom Hardy.
What about when they did show his face?
But that looked like it was so distant. It looked like his face was pasted on with, you know, those weird things where they put Obama's face on like a rabbit and they make it dance or something.
What? I mean, I know what you're talking about, but that's how it looked to you.
That's how it looked. That looked like that. And I was like, why did they put Tom Hardy's face on that big guy like that? That's why are they doing this? This makes absolutely no sense.
Well, you know, the best fighters are fighters who don't use the face. They use the body. Like Bane is the, and people tend to make decisions on what someone else is going to do by looking at their eyes, looking at their mouth, looking at their expression. What do you do when you're dealing with somebody that you can't do that with? You don't know what he's going to do. You don't know what he's thinking. I think that's what Bane was. You never knew. Because it wasn't about Bane. This movie was not about Bane. It was about Bruce.
But Kat, I mean, I think, Kat, you represent how most people feel about Bane. But yeah, I loved him. There were certain parts when he was yelling, when his character was yelling. And you could, when he was making his proclamation to the prisoners of Gotham, I thought his neck was going to explode. It was growing so large, his neck, and I thought it was going to pop. And there was a few subtle times where he might say something quizzical, every once in a while his eyebrows would do some crazy things. Not always, but in certain key moments. Before
he killed the scientist, did you notice that his eyebrows went really high? Like, like he was happy. Like he was really happy. Like, he killed that scientist, he cracked his neck, but he was smiling and happy when he did it. There was no anger behind that. It was just matter of fact. Well, the thing with Bane was that there was no point until, like, maybe that end when Batman punched that mask that you got emotion out of Bane.
Yeah.
There wasn't any of that. Like, everything, Bruce could not inflict fear. He couldn't inflict doubt. You know, in the first half of the movie, he could not affect Bane at all.
I was talking about his line, one of my favorite lines of his little sections. And I didn't understand all the words the first time I saw it at the IMAX, but when I saw it the second time, I was like, oh, that's what he says. Was the part where his first beat down on Batman, and then Batman cuts the lights, and the way Bane's like, oh, you know, you think the dark, because you adopted the dark, you know, I was born in it. And it wasn't until, I didn't see the light until I was an adult. And by then, it was blinding. And right then is when he punches Batman in the shadows. Oh, my God.
He sounded like a drunk Sean Connery.
That was good. That was well done, Eric.
I love that part. Oh, yeah. Man. I was like, that guy can kick anybody's ass. Oh, man. Oh, so good. Yeah, and a lot of people talked about the plot being overly complicated in the first half of the movie. And you know what? It kind of was for me, too. And I didn't pick up a ton of stuff. They were throwing out acronyms like DWP, and there was DCS, and I didn't even know what any of this meant. But I worked it all out on the second. I saw the beauty of Talia's entire plan upon my second viewing. How she, you know, she was playing Daggett, and Daggett was playing Catwoman, and actually it was Bane who was her tool to play them. And Daggett had Daggett like who's construction. Daggett was the guy,
whiny guy, the whiny business guy on the board.
Yeah, he was Owen Harper's boss. Owen Harper from Torchwood.
The guy from Torchwood. He was in Torchwood.
Yeah, but,
and they took him from the cartoon, which is
really funny. Who was in the cartoon?
He was the same kind of wiry villain in the Batman cartoon.
But see, Daggett controlled Daggett Construction Services, and it was all his cement crews going around town working on the infrastructure of the city. But then they laced the cement with explosive all this time, and nobody knew. So I didn't figure all that stuff out right from the top. And
look, can I throw in a question here? Yeah. I'm just curious.
You know, I'm one of the people that still thinks, you know, I did get the subtleties of the story, but I still felt like the story was a little over complex. But could somebody explain Bane's motivations to me?
Yeah. Well, I agree with that question.
I mean, yeah, sir, I'm being sincere Bane. Here.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
go ahead.
First, the interesting thing I thought, because I tend to always read Roger Ebert's reviews when he, especially the big movies.
Ebert, okay.
And, well, I don't always agree with him, but I just like to read what he has to say. And I was a bit confused by his review of this film in particular, because I wasn't sure if he left the theater early, or he's just mailing it in, or he's just going off the press notes, because the way he wrote it, he made it as if it was just Bane, and this is all Bane's thing. And I didn't know if he just didn't want to spoil the Talia thing, but he writes it as if Talia doesn't exist and her character's motivations don't exist. And that's part of the reason Roger, he still likes the movie, but he poo-poos it on that point on Bane and not understanding everything. And I just thought, this is so weird, because Roger Ebert, your review doesn't make sense unless we pretend Talia doesn't exist. Because after I seen the whole movie, I kind of thought Bane's whole thing was just, I don't even know if he cared about any of that Gotham business. It was his devotion.
He loved her.
Yeah, he loved Ubu. Her.
There was a character called Ubu in in the books that he was the protector for. Basically, it was like Roz was the emperor, Ubu was Vader, and he would get if he got shot at, Ubu would jump in front of the bullet. And it was funny how it looked like Nolan or his brother, who, you know, whoever helped him write the script, kind of combined that Ubu character with Bane and made it that he was so protective, because he loved that girl. He loved that little girl.
And the guy's name was Ubu.
Yeah, don't ask me. That's okay. That's what they came up with. That's,
it's fun to say.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Sit, Ubu.
Basically, that's what he did. But so he loved that girl. He loved Talia.
He owed his life to her. Well, and vice versa. They were like a symbiotic entity, the two of them.
Man,
the
that's a long way to go, though.
Yeah.
That was a long way to go for that. I mean, it was the inherent darkness that I wanted to get to know. You know, like when you look at the Joker, and, you know, one of the reasons I like bad guys that I can relate to. You know, there's got to be something in there, because, you know, I believe bad guys should make sense. Bad guys, they're tearing up junk. They got a plan. You know, they really are committed to it. And I like to understand it, because sometimes it's fun to root for the bad guy.
Now, but, in movies, because...
Of course. Okay. Of course, in movies is
what we just have to say in movies, because I started getting crazy there.
Of course, in movies. You know, it's just like a costume. It's fun to put on, but it's just for, you know, just for pretend. Mm-hmm. But
I don't know.
But the idea is, we're trying to, you know, I'm trying to feel what it is that Bane is doing. Now, I mean, if he's just, you know, supporting the love of a good woman, there was an awful lot of anger
more than that.
Or, you know, there was something else. There was something a lot darker there that was trying to get out, but. I don't know. It just didn't feel. I don't know. I am asking genuinely about the motivation.
So Bane got captured on the airplane just to escape, because he wanted the doctor to get the nuclear weapon to.
Well, he got the doctor because he needed someone to he was the only person who could weaponize.
And he needed him off the map.
The reactor.
He needed to get the doctor and make them believe that the doctor died.
Yep.
So that the CIA wouldn't be, while he was doing whatever his business, while they were doing their business, he wouldn't be looking for him.
Yep.
And then the other side of the thing was the whole entrapment of, you know, it was a whole huge chess game. And I know a lot of people didn't want to see a huge chess game played out, but I loved it, again, especially after I figured it all out about, getting Wayne's, fingerprints, and then doing the stock market thing, and then trapping Wayne to give the company to Talia, etc. And just all the whole.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yes, it's all very important. The whole.
So why does she want the company to
Because she didn't know where the reactor was. She knew it
existed. She needed to know.
And see, and that's the other thing. Wayne, that's how he bankrupted his whole company. Is he threw all his money into the research and development of this reactor. Mm-hmm. And then once they realized how dangerous it was, he hid it away, and that's how he ruined his company.
Right, I got that.
Yeah, but then she didn't know where it was, and she was like, come on, I can really help you out. And he's like, eh. And even Lucius Fox says, you know, the only way we can get out of this is if you let her in. And he's like, I'll think about it. But it wasn't until the whole stock market thing, and he lost all his shares, he's about to lose his company. Daggett was going to get it anyway. So he thought, oh, God, I got to get this out of Daggett's hands. So then he goes to Talia, she takes over, but she wins either way. Mm-hmm. It's all her master plan, and, you know. It was awesome. I thought it was awesome.
Now, I appreciate the artistry of the story. I'm still asking about Bane, though. You know, I just.
Well, it's probably the devotion, and then just getting his face bashed in the prison for his.
But
trouble.
we might not understand it. But there are people out there for. I mean, this is based on Nolan gets the stuff from real life events, and there are people that are that devoted to a person. You know, they look at that person as an ideal, as a symbol, as a, you know, all of that. And Bane blindly looked at her as that. Like, she was his leader. And just like Ra's al Ghul.
Well, no, because he was, I guess, dedicated to Ra's al Ghul. Therefore, he's
No, because he protected, because they talk about
how. Oh, yes, no.
She was the innocence in the dark, and he shielded her, and he helped her escape, and then he got his face bashed in. And then Ra's al Ghul came in later and rescued him.
And then he, like.
Ra's did something that. Yeah, Bane did something that Ra's couldn't do. He saved her.
Yeah.
He was the one that saved his daughter, and he hated him for it. Ra's hate his arrogance. He hated Bane because he did that.
I thought he hated Bane because Bane had the mask.
He hated Bane because Bane. Every time he looked at Bane, he saw that the sacrifice Bane took that beating for his daughter. He sacrificed more than anything, did more than even Ra's sacrificed for his own child. So that was a dig at Ra's, because remember, he always thought of himself as being, you know, going all the extra mile for what he believed in.
And I also love too how young Ra's, when he's the mercenary, he falls in love with the warlord's daughter, and then and then the warlord, you know, exacts his revenge. And then the same thing happens to Ra's when he grows up, because then he has this upstart who falls for his daughter, and now he finds himself in that position. I love when that stuff happens. Whether it's in Star Wars or Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings. I love when those themes keep repeating themselves in history and people get the tables turned on them.
Yeah. I mean, it was... And I mean, Bane didn't care about life. He didn't care if he died. It wasn't even about that. Like, he had no fear of dying. But it was amazing that this dude lives in perpetual pain all the time.
Yes.
And you have to, I mean, to deal with that pain, you have to believe in something. To not go insane, I mean, he probably did go a little insane, but...
Yeah, no, he was insane.
But I mean, but he controlled his rage. He aimed it. He aimed it. Like, Talia took him and aimed it at
He was like a controlled, like, force of nature.
Yeah, he was a weapon.
Absolutely. Weapon. Just like his own pain was controlled, because according to...
Just like her father did.
According to Wikipedia, his mask's purpose, it pumps this gas constantly to dull his pain, to make it, you know, survivable.
And right.
So...
I mean, but she did what her father did. Like,
so
how
would
her
he be high and relaxed and chilling instead
well,
of
being
so...
Well, that's the chilled version of Bane.
That's why it sounds like he's having so much fun, whatever he's doing.
Hey, yes. He enjoyed the song. Yeah, that's a sweet tune.
That's great here.
Beautiful voice. Yes.
That's crazy. Wow, we picked this one apart.
And no, well, we didn't even... No one even touched upon Blake. It's amazing.
Oh, my God. I love... With Joseph Gordon-Levitt is his name.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
He's the Robin now.
That's right.
Anybody like, oh no, Robin.
Well, yeah, but Robin Redux for sure, which of course angers people.
Definitely.
But excites me at the same time.
I thought they were going to call him Richard Grayson. I thought, but he went. He just said, "Ah, these nerds are gonna want to hear it." So they just said Robin. I bet you that's what he did. He
was, well, actually, I think it's the nerds that are more pissed, but I think it's the everyday folks who are just like, "Oh, cool, yeah. Robin." Because everyday folks know the name Robin, they don't know Grayson, and it just would have been confusing. Yeah,
like when folks. Bruce, did you see the way that the scenes that Bruce had with him, how he looked at him?
Yeah.
Like, it had, like, he looked at him like, I can do this. I can give this up. Like, yep. He was just looking at, that's why he sent him to the bridge. Mm-hmm. That was the reason he, because it was like, why would he send him away when he could be, he's a damn good fighter and he can help them with fighting Bane? No, because he wanted him to live because he wanted him to take over.
Yeah.
Because he saw that. He saw that.
He was mentoring him the whole way, and I love it because it's
such... It looked like he was like Joseph was mentoring Batman.
Well, honestly, no, he gave him a smack to the head, and kind of like got him back, you know, in the game. But it was really Batman who was schooling him along the way, explaining things like, "Well, this is why you need to wear a mask," you know.
Yes.
Well, Blake reminded him of that man that went into that restaurant. And with the gun, you know, the one that was angry at what's his face when they beat him up and he left Gotham. What was the name of the in Batman Begins when he was that angry in that very beginning? Blake was him. Like, he saw that. He reminded him of that.
Okay, yes.
That angry, angry young Bruce. That 21-year-old angry, thought he knew everything, but he didn't until Roz got him.
Yep.
And trained him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I thought it was the coolest. Have your cake and eat it too. You know, everyone knows they're promoting, you know, the end of the trilogy, the end of the saga, yada yada yada. But then it's still, I'm trying to, because it's almost incomparable. But I'm trying to compare it to other. This is like, if it's not the greatest, it's the most original origin story yet. Like, how cool of an origin story is this? This is your origin story, is Bruce Wayne's outing. It's the craziest thing. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-mm, explain.
Because typically in origin story, we all know, obviously it's our superhero, whoever it is, who has no powers before they discover their destiny. They're just a regular person. You know, we all sigh a little bit with every origin story, whether it's the reboot of Spider-Man or Batman Begins or whatever it is. But this one... It cheats because you don't even know it's an origin story until the last 5 seconds. That's true. And so how cool is that? They've tricked you because you don't experience any of the pain of an origin story because you didn't even know it was until it's over. And then you go, ha ha.
Yeah. You know, like, yeah, I didn't see that coming. And I do.
I didn't either. I mean, I was suspicious, but.
Really?
What do you mean? I didn't
feel a thing. I didn't see that coming at all. I just thought it was just some young cop. Well,
I
didn't see
that, but I knew that there was something. I knew.
Yeah, something was going on.
But
yeah,
I didn't know, like, you know, or is it just going to be an undercurrent that's never fully realized? Like, I didn't know that. I wasn't 100% sure till the full reveal, and then I dug it. And I know nerds out there are screaming. But no.
Minded, like, calm down. Like, I don't know why people would be screaming.
Well,
it's fine.
There are more that liked it than didn't, but there's always that.
Well, I guess the complainers have a
person
louder voice.
The ones that are stuck in continuity and they don't really like they look at everything as, this is my Batman, and you're not supposed to do, you know, what you want to do with my Batman. Like, just like with Star Trek, this is my Star Trek.
Yeah, absolutely, like that.
To change up my Star Trek. You know, like, and that's why they get so caught up in it that you can't even look at the story and enjoy it.
But honestly, I think it's for the greater good, the way it was done. But the other thing, I don't really think it's a controversy at all, but just because it's out there, like, what do you guys think? Because there's this growing faction who are saying, like Inception, there's an open-ended bit at the end where you could go either way. A lot of people are trying to say that, the bit at the end at the cafe or whatever with Alfred, there's a lot of people wanting to believe that that was a dream sequence.
No, that happened.
That didn't really happen. There's people saying that, you know, that Batman really did die in the Bat, and went down with the bomb.
But well, then why would Morgan Freeman have the thing about Fox. The why
yes,
would he have the thing about?
I agree. But I'm just saying it. And I thought it might get squelched this movement, but I feel like it's growing at least with what
those
I see
people
in tweets.
Well, there's a movement where they want Batman to die. They don't want to believe that Batman would ever quit being Batman. It's that thing, because that's, you know, like that doesn't show that he's devoted to, you know, being the hero or whatever. Like, why would he ever hang up the cowl and live a normal life? So they don't want to believe that their hero would do something like that.
At first, when I only saw it the first time, I almost got convinced by the dream crowd, because it wasn't all clear to me. And also because that end bit happened so quick that I didn't really have a chance to take it all in. I'm talking just the last 60 seconds of the movie. But after seeing it a second time, I am not there with the dream crowd.
Yeah, I'm not on the dream team.
And I realized that there was, because he left behind three things, Bruce Wayne did, that are shown in the end of the movie. He talked about already the thing that Lucius Fox saw, that the autopilot was fixed. See, I didn't even fully understand that, because it went by too quick the first time for me. There's that. The only thing he leaves for Robin, of course, is the bag, which has, like, the mountaineering equipment, and it has coordinates to find the Batcave.
Right.
And I didn't fully get that either the first time. Like, I thought maybe Blake was just out there on his own being suspicious. And
you could get seen like that, though, early on.
Yeah, because I didn't see the coordinates. It's all there. And then
I saw the coordinates.
The third clue, which I think lends credence to the fact that it wasn't a dream for Alfred, was that they talk about how the pearls are missing and they can't find them.
Yeah.
And then, of course, so I was like, cause I thought, how the hell does Bruce know which damn cafe to go to? You know, like, Alfred didn't specify or anything. But then you see that... that Anne Hathaway's wearing the pearls there at the very end. I was like, that's how Alfred found them. That's how they came together.
Because they still have the tracking in them.
Exactly.
Exactly. Remember he said
that? I thought he, in his little speech, he said he was going to, like, go to his cafe and drink some Chianti or whatever the hell, and he's going to look over and see Batman. I thought he specified the cafe.
Well, he said that he always... Oh, I didn't know that he specified the exact... He said something... I thought he said, like, the town... Or the whatever, but I didn't know that.
Well, maybe when you thought it was a town, it was a cafe name.
Maybe so, but I think it's down to the pearls. I mean, yeah,
because why would they mention it? Why would they put it in there? Because remember,
he tracked the pearls at an earlier time in the movie. I don't think Alfred would be tracking the pearls now. It would be a different.
I think he would.
I think it'd be Alfred, and I think he'd like be just about the only person who knew besides Bruce Wayne. And then, I mean, because why bring up the pearls in the last 60 seconds of the movie,
and then when Lucius found the remote, like found that the remote was working, that Bruce fixed it. I can't see him not telling Alfred.
Yeah,
I think.
Well, didn't see it.
Well, what I'm saying, I think he knows. I think that he told Alfred. You would just assume they're friends. They are.
Right. It just worked out super clean for me upon the second viewing, and it was pretty crystal clear. And I was like,
I think people just wanted to be a dream because they saw all the characters from Inception. It was like, oh, Christopher Nolan does weird stuff, and so therefore Batman's ending is a dream. I'm sorry, I don't know why I sound like
Hobbs and Schwarzenegger.
Hobbs to Mars.
Jeez, you think about Batman and Robin. Wrong movie.
I thought you were doing a Star Wars character from the prequel.
I have no idea what that
is. It was obvious that the whole
thing. Wait. Cat, say Trade Federation. Go ahead, say it.
Leave me alone.
it was obvious what, Carl?
That's obvious that it was not a dream because the top on Alfred's table
did not spin.
Exactly. So, dead giveaway. And you saw Liam Neeson, his arm crossed right next to Hayden Christensen. It's obvious. The whole movie is crystal clear.
Oh, my God.
I mean, and even that ending was such a nice nod because it was like, I know, you know, it was just that way. Bruce is going to that cafe. They probably went to that cafe for a while, you know, until they would see Alfred waiting, because he can finally look at Alfred and go, I was listening to what you were telling me.
Yep.
I love it.
It's because, you know, I can just imagine, you know, Selena's like, How many times do we have to go to this cafe? Almost, baby. He's going to find the pearls. You know, he's just hanging in there.
Hold on. Hold on.
Oh, sorry. And the other thing I really love about this movie, I love a good trilogy, quadrilogy, septology in the case of Harry Potter. But I mean, I love a series that by and large, you have the consistent cast and crew, director of photography, going through the whole line to where you get the consistency, and it seems like it was all a plan, and it was all by design, and it's solid, it fits together. And the thing I find even more amazing, now that I learned it today, about this particular trilogy, from Nolan's statements that had been going around Twitter for the forward of the book of the making of this series, about how he talks about each movie in the trilogy, they always thought, this is it. There's not going to be anything that follows it. They made Batman Begins thinking this is a one-shot and that we're not going to revisit this. They did the same thing with The Dark Knight, thinking there's not going to be a sequel to The Dark Knight, and they still made Rises. And somehow, even with that frame of mind, it seems like these movies were meant to go together. It seems like it was by design. You would have thought that he meant to bring Neeson back, or the Scarecrow would have his cameos. If Ledger was still alive, I have to believe he would have had some type of minor flat cameo or in things that went down in Rises.
He probably would have been the judge.
Yeah,
the judge in the crazy court case. Remember the judge?
Yeah. Because that was the Scarecrow, and I didn't even realize that was the Scarecrow.
Oh, I knew.
I knew he was. I recognized. I was like, oh yeah, he's supposed to be this. But for some reason, Scarecrow was in Spider-Man, the original Spider-Man trilogy, in my brain for some reason. I don't know why.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, well, why didn't they show his crazy stupid mask, or at least throw it up or something like that? Because I just really did not have any signposts that was Scarecrow. What
they did was, and it was subtle, they ruffled the seams on his coat, and it almost made it look like hay was popping out of his seams.
Oh, I didn't notice that. That was too subtle.
That I just love his desk. That was madness. That pile of desks with the papers hanging all over it. That was awesome. Love the kid.
Yeah, that's a madman right there.
He's a psychiatrist. A criminal psychiatrist at that. I mean, he's used to manipulating, you know, people and eliminating criminals. That's what he did. That's why Roz hired him.
And also, I had this very friendly debate, this very enthusiastic debate with some other friends. And what do you guys think? Like, with the setup and everything, is this a setup for something else down the road?
No.
Are we going to see the further film adventures of Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
I think that the tragedy kind of ruined it for Nolan, and he's going to take a break from it. He needs to walk away.
Oh, no, no.
No, I no, 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 no.
I absolutely
never
think Nolan is done. Nolan is done with Batman. He is
well,
not
let me tell
direct
you one thing. Nolan, Warner Brothers wanted to do the Avengers thing with their characters.
What?
Yeah.
What? Yeah.
They had asked what they had planned
on
doing.
No, Justice League,
is
what he means.
Yeah, but they wanted to do the Avengers type thing with the DC characters.
I thought you were talking about a
but
DC
what
trying
they,
to put Batman in there. Okay.
No, no, but what they did was they were counting on having Nolan come in and be the Joss Whedon of it and put all the characters together and help them, you know, connect the dots between Superman, the Man of Steel that's coming up,
right,
and all of it. And Nolan flat out said, you know, even with the money they put a whole bunch of money on the table for him to do it, and he still said, I have no interest in doing any more superhero movies.
He must be rich.
But as I said, I don't think there's any way he's ever gonna direct another Batman movie regardless of the situation. But he does have his hands and fingers all up in Man of Steel, even though he's not directing.
Oh, yeah.
Even though
his brother, isn't this him and his brother are doing they did the script?
I don't know. Well,
yeah, I think the brother, the Man of Steel, the brother, just like they did with Batman.
Right. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, him and his brother are doing Jonathan Nolan. They did the screenplay for Dark Knight Rises and the other movies. They tapped the brother to do the screenplay for Man of Steel. And I think by hiring the brother to do it, I think they're trying to slick, you know, trying to be slick and say, and try to get him through his brother to come in and kind of, you know, take this over. But Nolan doesn't want to do superhero. So he's not that, you know, this is not his. This superhero movies don't make him happy. This is just a character that he was able to get into. And they kind of gave him the power that he needed, because he got, he had full power to veto stuff. Like, he vetoed 3D. You know, he vetoed a lot of changes they wanted to do. There was no real, like, they didn't have a Robin in it. Like, they wanted to, like, maybe you want to throw Robin in there with the suit and have him jumping around and fight. Nope. All that stuff, he had control, something they don't usually give directors anymore, especially with a franchise.
But that being said, I mean, yeah, I expect to never see Christian Bale or Nolan again. But no one thinks any continuation of the Adventures of Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
I'd like to see it, but I don't think they're
going to
do it.
What they're saying is that they're going to take a time to kind of work on connecting movies together.
But even now, even in that sense, that you could still
watch Looper.
You could still have your cake and eat it too, and go that way if you wanted to. If you made him the new Batman, and then
I think the smartest thing to do is to get as far away from Nolan's Batman, because you're never going, you're not going to top it. Get away! Don't try to be Nolan's Batman. I think it's best to put him in the league. Have him. He could be Batman and not, you know, not campy, but have him be the Batman that get in a jet with Robin and talk to Superman and hang out with Aquaman. Like, if that's what they want to do, they need to get away. They're gonna have to get away.
It sounds scary to me. It does. I mean, if I'm an exec at Warner Brothers or wherever, I'm thinking, man, that's a lot to gamble on.
Avengers was gamble.
I know, for sure. But you already knew the characters. You knew Tony Stark.
No, you
was
didn't.
Gonna, well, you, yeah, you did. You knew Tony Stark was gonna pull it out. You
nobody
knew, that.
Knew Tony
Stark. Well, I would argue you didn't know that until Iron Man came out.
Right. Nobody knew Iron Man.
Yeah, but Avengers wasn't planned until like way after that.
Yeah, but
that was their ultimate goal.
Right.
Before they always knew they wanted to do
that. Yeah, but if like Iron Man had did like Green,
correct?
What was the whatever Green? Yeah, that Green Lantern. Horrible thing. Lantern. Thank you.
Lantern.
Thank you. If it done like that, then they would have squashed the whole.
Oh,
thing.
You're absolutely right. But it was their plan, and you know, that was
because people forget. Like, people forget none of the Thor, Cap. When they said this stuff to studios, this was not supposed to work. None of this was supposed to work. You can't connect other franchises together. You don't do that. That doesn't work. Nobody thought that was going to work. They didn't get that going until after it got under Marvel Studios.
But I say this as a totally biased because my comic reading is in Marvel and not DC is still like an alien world to me for the most part as far as comics are concerned. It's like if you want to do Justice League down the road, to me, Avengers has the advantage of the main components, the main Avengers being, even though people didn't know Tony Stark like that before,
no,
they're more recognizable, I think, characters individually, because aside from Batman and Superman, and I know Green Lantern's really popular in the comic world, but obviously his film was, really, really bad. One of the worst films I've seen in recent years.
It was better than Skyline.
Sure was.
I don't think that.
Yeah, that's saying a lot.
I don't think it was better than Skyline.
It was.
Eric, I don't know who you are anymore.
I don't think it was better than Skyline. I don't know.
But you gotta look at it this way.
But I mean, Superman, I could never get on board with Aquaman and Cyborg, and like, I don't even know what those people are.
No, forget them. Forget that. I'm talking about if you put up the set, Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, you know. Everybody knows. Out of the country, the merchandising that WB makes off of these three characters, even in foreign market, is phenomenal. That's the only reason why they still have these comics going today. Because if it wasn't for how much money they make off of branding and all that, these books wouldn't be coming out. Not enough people buy comics.
Unless they get Megan Fox for Wonder Woman, I don't think.
But listen, everything can't work until it does work. And people forget. Like every time people forget. Just like Lucas, you can't do that until he did it and it worked. So you can say you can't do a Justice League.
Everybody told him he can't do the new but movies. They did not work, really. I mean, they kind of did.
If you build a foundation, actually, you can do anything you want. I just think it's going to be a tough foundation to lay.
Leave me alone, Carl. Shut your reality up, man.
Everybody told him he could do it, and he screwed it up.
You were going to go a different direction.
Well, they said he couldn't do it, then he did it, and it was cool, and then he tried to do it all on his own, and then it was bad.
Curious, anybody have any thoughts on the Zack Snyder teaser, Superman Man of Steel teaser?
Was Clark Kent a longshoreman? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Let me pull out my nerd again. Superman, there were stories done, like Superman Birthright, Superman For All Seasons, before the time between when Clark, before he went to Metropolis and got a job as a reporter and put on the suit for the first time and fought crime, he traveled the world to learn. Like, he was saying that you need to learn who you want to be. Either you're going to be a superhero or you're not, or you're going to do something else that's going to benefit the world. You need to know the world. Mm-hmm. So he traveled. You know, he hiked all over the way to New England. Looked like a fisherman commercial.
It did. I was like, "Where's Billy Joel jumping in?"
The first time I saw it was online because God, they didn't show it at the IMAX. They didn't show any trailers at the IMAX, so I had to watch it online the first time. I have to admit, when I first clicked on it and I was watching, I did recognize Costner's voice because I saw the Jonathan Kent first. Kevin Costner.
Jor-El's voice, and then they have Russell Crowe who does Jor-El's voice.
Well, the first time I didn't know there was two, and I just saw the Jonathan Kent version, and I was watching it, and I recognized Costner's voice, and I was like, okay. And I honestly thought that I clicked on the wrong link. I thought this was like some kind of teaser for The Guardian or Perfect Storm or something. Honestly, I thought, whoa, I was like checking like the caption. Wait, what? And I thought, oh, this is one of those stupid fan edits that are just they took clips from other movies. I was like, damn it, clicked on the wrong. And then, you know, midway, oh, okay. But I honestly thought I clicked on
the wrong. That's not the trailer. Scene. Yeah, that's super slight. That's not the trailer that they showed at Comic-Con.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I figured that out too.
The trailer, I put it up on the website. I don't know if it's still up, if they took it down off of YouTube, but I put a link up on my wife a website, but you can look it up. Just look up Comic-Con footage of Man of Steel and you'll probably find it. In that, you see Clark fighting other Kryptonians.
What?
You see him captured by Kryptonians because they were alluding to that they used a story called The Superman, which was it's a convoluted nerd story, but
what?
Brainiac who cataloged races. He was a construct who cataloged different races. He took a section of the Kryptonians before Krypton was destroyed and shrunk them down and kept them hidden, cataloged them.
In that flying triangle trapezoid thing?
Oh my God, there's something in Doctor Who called the Miniscope that does exactly what you're saying.
Oh God, you made me watch that crazy episode.
Sorry, go on.
So they get out, like Superman fights Brainiac and
it's the Phantom Zone in Smallville.
That's not the same thing. So they freed them. They freed the Kryptonians, and then a fraction of them fell under the sway of Zod, basically saying that we are powerful. Why should we be serving humanity when humanity should be serving us? So Superman has to fight some of the Kryptonians.
Spoiler tag right here. This is like almost all news to me.
So pieces of it is cut, like they're using pieces of that story. I don't know how much they're going to go with it, but that's until I saw that trailer, that's when I knew that the leak that they put out is true, because you saw the Kryptonians capture Superman and he's walking chained up. You know, he's in this little gauntlet thing and they're walking with the other Kryptonians.
I could do some micro Kryptonians. I think I could.
What does that mean exactly?
Microscopic Superman. I could go.
Yeah.
Oh, well, like you can accept it.
Yeah.
I was like, what are we talking about?
It's a radical idea or thought. I don't know. I'm on board with the miniaturization. That Honey, just, I Shrunk the Superhero. Yeah.
No.
Like,
no.
It's creepy. I'm telling you now. Yeah. But I guess so.
No, but I mean, I don't know.
Because we got to go the opposite. We can't do any more Lance games. We can't. Luther is not even in the movie.
Yeah. Oh. I'm looking forward to this. They keep harping on it that this is a Superman movie as if no Superman movie ever existed ever. Completely right. Starting over stylistically and in every other way. And I think that's... I'm actually kind of excited about it in this particular case more than ever. Because I would like to see, like, you know, living in a world where there hasn't ever been a Superman movie and see what comes out of that.
And Nolan's like to get deep into a character. You know, they do it. They do the character stuff and what they do. And you kind of, you see from that trailer, I think they're going to go that way.
Definitely. Like,
why would Clark Kent, a.k.a. Kal-El, why would he save humanity? Why would he constantly put that cape on and help us when he doesn't have to? And I think that's what they want to explain.
Because of Martha Kent, and he was raised that way, right?
Well, who did the voiceovers? You get the...
Liam Neeson?
No.
Oh.
Kevin Costner.
No. Oh. No. Cat.
Russell Crowe.
So no. What I'm really concerned about, right? Oh, you're gonna go more on Sue. Okay, go ahead, because I'm gonna...
No, I'm just gonna say, when the time comes, just remember that, because I've rewatched almost all Nolan's films in the last 2 months, his entire filmography, and just one thing I noticed he's done, just I want to say in every single movie he's made, he always has at least one, maybe more, flashbacks that you always take as read earlier in the movie, but then trick you at the end. And he's done it like in every movie, not just in his Batman movies. He did it in Inception, he did it in Insomnia, he did it in Memento. Just flashbacks that you just go, oh, okay, that flashback is telling me that so-and-so was this in the past, and he always flips it. He always, it's in every one of his movies.
Damn it, so I'm gonna totally see,
I can see it happening. I can see it happening. Because how is Superman gonna fight a whole thing of Kryptonians?
Because he's super. So I'm really concerned about Ant-Man.
Why are you concerned?
Yeah, why?
Because I don't want to. Spider-Man is bad enough, but I don't want
to. Wait, bad enough? Because, what do you mean bad enough?
Well, because spiders are gross, right?
And so
getting all girly on us, right?
Okay, zip it for a second. When I'm concerned about my concern mainly because when they said Iron Man was coming out, I was like, I don't know who that is. I don't give a damn. And I'm in love with Iron Man, right?
No, but...
I love that. But so Ant-Man, I like Iron Man because he has the gadgets and he's crazy and he's snippy and smart and funny.
You're already showing your Ant-Man ignorance, but continue.
Go ahead. Right. That's what I'm saying. And I don't know anything about this guy.
We don't know which one, though.
We don't know if it's going to be
there's that too.
Hank Pym, Eric O'Grady, or Scott Lang. We don't know.
I'm thinking Hank. But anyway, but that aside, but first of all, Kat, when he's called Ant-Man, it's not like Spider-Man or Batman where he necessarily has all these ant traits. Like, he doesn't live in a hive mind or, like, scavenge or anything. He doesn't have venom and, like, come out of his teeth. The main reason he's called Ant-Man, it's mostly just because of size.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Little?
He could have been called Amoeba Man.
Because first he shrinks. First he learns to use the serum.
Because you like people when they shrink. And
I know, but I'm just telling you, it's not because he's, like, a bug. He's not, like... I'm just saying he's not the fly, you know, with wings and like throwing up on his food. He's just mainly called Ant-Man because it's more about the size, not because of the actual insect. It's not like, oh, he can lift 10 times his body weight because he's an ant. No.
Really? He doesn't do that. You promise he does not lift 10 times?
No, he lifts his body weight. He can still, I know it's weird, but he can still lift what he can lift when he's full size.
Because that's the other thing. Because currently he's Giant Man, in the comics right now. But see, that's because
name. What did you just say?
Giant Man.
Giant Man.
Giant Man.
like
because it refers more to
his size, not about his heritage or his genetic makeup. It's more just a name.
Right.
I don't like it.
Well, he's a scientist. I don't know which way they're going to go, because he's a scientist. If it's the Hank Pym one, which is the original.
Like Mantis?
Ant-Man. No, no. Okay. Well, yeah, kind of like Mantis, being that he's very smart and he developed this. He didn't even want to be a superhero. He just developed this serum that can he can grow or shrink or whatever, because he's a man of science. But sometimes he gets a little too caught up in the science part. He's like he's Bruce Wayne. He's Tony Stark, but without being good with women. He's just the scientific part. He's stuck on that part, so he neglects girlfriends. Like, so.
Yeah, I don't think I like him. I feel neglected already.
Well,
he's the awkward
guy. Obviously, I don't know if this movie is gonna succeed or not, or how it's gonna be the reception it's gonna get, but.
Maybe it'll be like Green Hornet. I enjoyed that.
See, no!
Hornet, not...
yeah.
I didn't like that. Hornet
was worse than Green Lantern.
What? It was funny. It was goofy. I liked it because it was goofy.
It was garbage.
It wasn't worse. Well, now. Come
on. And Ant-Man...
It was better than Skyline.
I still think Skyline is better. But,
I was messing with Eric.
But but was it Edgar Wright is directing... Ant-Man, and he did the film version of Scott Pilgrim, and I love that movie. I love the way it looks. I love the way it was made. It's very different than any other movie, and I'd like to see what he does on Ant-Man, because it's not going to be a straightforward movie.
Are there any cool superheroes left? Like, have we used them all? Because no. Ant-Man seems like you're scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Oh, but he's one of the original Avengers.
Yeah.
Come on, give him some cred. Yes.
So you promise he's not gonna like wear hat with antenna.
I'm not making any promises.
I hope they don't go to because
he does have route. Antenna sometimes.
Yes. But he can talk to ants because he can. Listen. Like, this is the part where you tell your woman, don't put your clothes on and leave now. Come on, let me talk to you. He can use the electrical. You know, ants. They talk to each other through electrical, impulses, whatever they give off. He built a suit where he built a helmet where he could actually tap into that and make the ants do what he wants them to. Like, he can command them like a ant queen would command the ants to do things.
Yeah, like the quiet guy in Empire Strikes Back.
I'm going that home. Dude. Call me.
No, but I'm just like, hey, let's wait and see what happens. You know, obviously... Right. It's going to be made for this day and age, one way or the other.
Well, I'll say maybe if I didn't watch Green Hornet until... I didn't watch it in theaters because I thought it was going to be terrible.
That movie broke my heart.
I don't like that movie.
It broke my heart. Garbage.
Come on, back me up.
No. I guess we could get high on some green smoke and drive around town.
I guess that would be the only way I could enjoy it.
No, but yeah, at least give him some credit that he was one of the original Avengers, along with Hulk, Thor.
That didn't sound cool at all.
Well, you know, Magnum Man was trademarked. And so,
wow, that what is that?
You like that name, right?
Suddenly she's intrigued. I don't know.
I want the Magnum Man.
Yes.
Magnum Man in my movies.
I want to know what that is.
You're scared but intrigued at the same time, right?
Intrigue.
Falcon, you're going to get Falcon.
Oh, but you know what? You're talking about other heroes. The other one that, you know, people were pissed that it was Ant-Man and not Black Panther. A lot of people were hoping for Black Panther. But Panther, sorry.
Black Panther.
Crap like that, you don't want to, you know.
Huh? What'd you say?
I said it sounds scary. Nobody wants to see a superhero called Black Panther. That's going to be too scary for the public.
Well.
That would be another interesting one, though, down the road.
I will say, because of that, they do have another shot at Green Lantern. They could do another Green Lantern movie.
Well, they are.
They are?
With that one guy. That
not with him. Not.
Oh, see. Not. There you go.
Not with him.
That.
Black Rhinos?
Huh?
Yes, Black Ryan Reynolds. That's exactly.
Yeah, so we picked the movie Soul Man. And
that's right. Yes.
Well, they're exactly.
Oh, what is the I don't know what we're talking about now.
Yes,
there is a Black Green Lantern.
Yes,
and John Stewart.
So we were saying, you know, if you're going to do a different character and try to bring back the character of Green Lantern,
it's Alba.
Why don't you just give him
a try? He can't play everybody. He can't be Thor's doorman.
He can. He
can do well, it. I think Captain America did it good, going from being Torch to Captain America. I think that worked out pretty
good. Yeah, but they still, the Thor franchise is still going. Like, it's not... It's got two more movies to go.
By the way, what is it with all the Brit dudes taking over all the lead male parts?
They're everywhere, aren't they?
Idris Elba, Christian Bale, Andrew Garfield.
I blame Doctor Who.
Rick Grimes. Man, I did not know Rick Grimes from the TV show Walking Dead was a Brit.
Yeah.
He had me fooled with his southern drawl.
Yeah, man.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, Walter Bishop, well, he's not Brit, but he's Australian. God, mm-hmm. Everybody, yeah. They're just
so
taking
Chris
over.
Hemsworth.
And the Spider-Man dude.
Andrew Garfield. Spider-Man.
We're losing all the good American heroes.
Idris Elba.
We need the greatest American hero. That's what we need now.
Well, you know,
Mr. Fantastic was British. Damn.
Yep, but that was bad, though.
Yeah, it was bad.
Americans are everyone, so that's okay. We love everyone.
Everyone's like the lead man.
Well, if we're everyone, how come we can't get any then? That's
can we get some jobs, man?
Yeah, please. You know, the economy's rough.
Need to enjoy other cultures.
Enjoy them, and
but they're masquerading as us. They're tricking me.
A little too whatever. We love everyone.
Liam Neeson, Colin Farrell.
Oh yes, Total Recall. I'm so excited. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's supposed to be Arnold.
No, I'm actually cool with that. Like, I'm thinking like less, like just I don't know, something that doesn't have all the hype behind it. Just
you're supposed to have Arnold running around with a bag accent, yelling at people. That's what Total Recall is supposed to be.
An aged Sharon Stone,
breasted woman.
Yeah, she's coming back,
but she's on Earth. Oh.
Well, you sound really excited. Wow, you are embarrassing.
How many hands you got, Carl?
Yes, indeed. I'll make it work.
Oh, I just sensed what I was going to say. But, no, but she's on Earth instead of on Mars now. It seems from the trailer I just saw. Not that that matters. Spoiler. I mean, it's going to ruin my fanfic, but...
Because I found out early on, and it's a spoiler, and I didn't want to know that.
Mm-mm, I didn't know that either.
Oh, you didn't want to know she was in it, or that...
Oh, I didn't want to know what you just said.
Well, I got from the trailer. The trailer that they showed at the theater when I saw Batman.
I didn't even look that deep. I didn't see that. I didn't even know to realize that she was on Earth.
Well, because he's like... he's looking for recall at the time when he runs into her in the trailer.
Oh, that's right. Man, Eric, man.
What? It's with the trailer.
You pay too much attention. Stop being so attentive.
This is what I was looking for. It's not that I was looking for the three-breasted women, but what I was looking for was from the trailers I've seen, and I haven't done extra research, just the obvious ones that we've all seen, it seems like almost everything they've shown has been Earth. They haven't shown anything Mars. So I'm assuming they're doing that on purpose and that they're trying to save that for a big reveal or something. So that's what I was actually looking for, was like seeing if I see any like red looking, you know, scenes like in the trailers. And so far I haven't really seen anything that looks like Mars to me. So that's what I was actually trying to see. Oh, and so man. When I saw her and then I realized what they said, I'm like, oh, yeah, still no Mars.
So. I don't want to see the movie no more.
it kind of looks like Blade Runner, you know.
Yeah,
it does. Oh, it very much does. Some
scenes. It ain't like Blade Runner because I would have fell asleep.
I said that too the first time.
No, I finally watched Blade Runner all the way through without falling asleep.
How'd you do it?
I don't know. It was just engaging and moody. I loved it.
Thank you.
That is the way you're supposed to appreciate it.
And then you see the real young Captain Adama looking young as all hell.
Yeah, man. Wasn't that crazy?
Crazy. I just love it because I saw the new cut or something.
The final cut.
Yeah.
The super deluxe suitcase cut.
Yeah, because I got that for Christmas one year and it was just been like collecting dust. And I was like, let me watch this.
I got the Harlem cut.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, which means if people walking through the shot, dude with a popcorn in front of it. This is the best part right here. It's the part I like coming up. Yeah.
I was like, I ain't know Blade Runner has so many black people in it.
but yeah, just think if you would have saw that in 82. I mean, it's crazy.
It ain't even got no lifesavers or nothing in it.
Look, the fact that it was everything that cyberpunk would be for the next 20 years. You know, that is what just blows your mind. The biotech, you know, the flying cars, everything, and the dark, dirty city that you would see as the backdrop for everything from the Matrix, Mnemonic, all of that stuff. In 82, I mean, that's the future, people. It was beautiful.
And I noticed too, the first time I saw Total Recall, the new one, the trailer on the big screen, like, yeah, that looks a lot like 2029 Los Angeles or whatever it is in the movie. But then, of course, I was reminded right away by another nerd on Twitter that, of course, the source material is written by the same author. His universe always kind of has that look. So yeah, it makes complete sense. It's going to look like Blade Runner.
So true.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to something not super built up, just moderately.
And that hopefully will deliver. That hopefully
I'm scared. I'm scared. I am a little scared.
Looks like the kind of movie that even if it falls flat, that it has enough eye candy that it'll probably just be like, I'm good.
Yeah, Jessica Biel jumping from places.
Beckinsale. I'm a Beckinsale man.
Yeah, both of them. I wouldn't kick neither one of them out the room. They'd kick me out.
That's four breasts. You know, that always trumps three.
And that's our show, guys.
It's just getting good now.
Oh, that's when she draws the line.
There you go. She had no problem with Magnum Man, but four breaths we can't do. Fine.
I done listened to a whole bunch of her and Steph. Just, I don't even know how to explain it, how they did. But now she draw the line at four boobs.
Cat, we're just ribbing you for your pleasure.
Yeah.
What?
In the Magnum way.
Cut him off. Oh,
you're just lubricating your mind.
Thank you. And with that, thank you for joining us on the Sci-Fi Party Line. You know we on Twitter.
Your feedback, yes. Thank you, Carl. We're on Twitter. We have a website, scifipartyline.com. We're on Facebook and Google+. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we will see you at the party next time. Bye-bye.
End of line.